Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, that's pound 529, from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line here on VSiN. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. Going to have Mike Palm join us a little bit later on this hour, Michael. But I did want to get into week number 9 because it does begin in earnest tonight in your neck of the woods back there in the East Coast and the Meadowlands. The New York Jets playing in New Jersey still bothers me a little bit, Michael. They just don't even get the city right. But they're 2-point favorites here over the Texans. We know the Texans are walking wounded, seeing some 1.5s out there, and the total sitting at 42. Is there a game script that you see that you need to adhere to for either team in order to be victorious? Like, can we say, hey, man, if we're the Jets, we got to play defense. We can't turn it over. We got to run the football. That's the formula for success tonight.
Well, it's hard to run the ball. The Jets are 29th on rushing attempts per carry, which is difficult, right? Not that they're much better in the passing game. They're 23rd, right? But I think this game comes down to you've got to have balance because over the last 3 weeks, the Texans have forced 9 turnovers, right? They've only given the ball up twice. So they're plus 7 in the turnover takeaway column. And that doesn't even count the missed field goals that went against them. So for me, that's the issue. And what the Jets have to be able to do is get the ball down the red zone. If you get the ball down the red zone, you're going to get a touchdown. The Texans are 30th in the league in allowing touchdowns once they get in the red zone. So they've got to handle the movement of the Texans front. They've got to secure their edges, which is the weak part of the Jets offense, right? They've got Tyron Smith at left tackle. They've got Morgan Moses at right tackle. And when you got Anderson and Danielle Hunter going against you, you really have a hard time. But I think one of the weaknesses we saw with the Texans team last week in a game they should have lost to the Colts, if the Colts would have managed the end of the half correctly, is this offensive line for the Texans is not very good. The left guard got benched last week, Green, the first-round pick from Texas A&M. He got benched. It was so bad. The right tackle, Tyus Howard, has not played well all year. No one's really playing well in their offensive line, including Tunsil. So the Jets have to do a really good job, and this is where the Jets can gain it. They're the best first-down team in football defensively. They're really good at being able to create those first-down plays, win the game, get it in 2nd and 10. And then, you know, forced to see if Stroud can make some plays, throwing the ball to somebody other than Stephon Diggs and other than Nico Collins, who he misses tremendously. Look, the key for the Jets is this is the best team in the National Football League in forcing negative plays, the Houston Texans. And they can't be in 2nd and 14. If you're in 2nd and 14, now all of a sudden Hunter becomes a bigger player, Anderson becomes a bigger player, and your liability of the two tackles become bigger players. And then that's what happens next. Uh-oh, you turn the ball over. And I think, to me, that's going to be the key to the game. And if you've got to be able to not have balance. I mean, the last 3 games that Albrecht's been the head coach, they've given up over 400 yards on the ground. They can't do that.
When you're looking at what D'Amico Ryans is doing in Houston in year number 2, and I think it was a shock to many. I know it was a shock to me. When you get C.J. Stroud last year and you flip the whole equation on what we've seen from Texans football here in recent years, what is he doing to get those turnovers? What is it about, you know, obviously coming over from San Francisco as their defensive coordinator, he's clearly having success on that side of the ball. What is it that you're seeing that D'Amico is doing to give this team a chance to win every week?
Well, I think he's got really, you know, he's got good edge players, right? So he's got Anderson, who helps him tremendously, gives them some guy. And then he added Hunter to their team. And yeah, They're fast on defense. Their movement's fast, right? And their defensive tackle situation has been improved with Autry inside. And even though Tim Settle, he was hurt, he won't play. And what they've been really good at, their linebacker, right? Toto is really a good player, but he's injured. Al-Shahir is injured also. He was a kid who came over from Tennessee, played with D'Amico at San Francisco. He's really a good player. They've got 4 starters that may not play tonight, and that's probably going to be the hardest thing to overcome, especially the speed of their linebackers. That's where they really make up, because they're fast on defense, right? They can really run. When Al Shaair's in the game, they're explosive. But if they have to go to Neville Hewitt, a guy who was with the Jets before, or if they got to go with Jake Hansen, a college free agent, that becomes a little bit of a problem. So to me, where he's done a great job is installing his defense. They play very good in the back end. I mean, I think Singletary's one of the best cover corners in the league, and they've been able to get away with it. But now, you know, and Lassiter has come in, the second round pick, he's played very well, so they've improved their secondary. To me, I think that's going to be the key. They've got to be able to overcome their lack of depth tonight.
When you see C.J. Stroud now in year number two, I almost feel like with the injuries that you mentioned with the Texans that they're having, obviously the injuries they have at wide receiver, and yet they're 6-2. Is he masking? Is he elevating enough, Michael, that he is now so good in year two that he can cover up those things that we see? Like, that's what we thought Aaron Rodgers would do, right? Oh, he'll come in for Zach Wilson,
right, yeah,
and he'll be the guy that masks all the problems and figure out ways to win. That's what I see out of C.J. Stroud. Do you see the same thing?
Well, I think what Stroud's been able to do is protect the football, right? And he's let the other team lose it. Like like the Colts last week, they just lost the game, right? They lose the game. And I mean, you know, he's played really well. Even in the Packer game, you know, they did nothing in the Packer game and they had a chance to win it at the end, right? Jacksonville, the same thing. They've won that game by 4 points. They beat Buffalo by 3 points. They lost to Green Bay by 2. They beat the Colts by 3. I mean, we're not talking enough about how many games they've won by single digits. I mean, they beat the Colts twice. One game was 2, one game was 3. The Bears were 6 points. I mean, really, when you look at them statistically, their point differential is very small because they've had the one game where they got blown out by Minnesota 34-7, and then they had the other game where they won, beat New England 41-21. So they have been very good. Look, it's hard to get first downs against them, Dave. They haven't given up over 20 first downs in any game this year. They're fast to the football, but where you can make hay on them is you can score when you get in the red zone. But the problem is, because they're so good at creating negative plays, it's hard to put eight good plays together, because you get in that 2nd and 16 because they forced a negative play on you, and all of a sudden now you're punting.
By the way, you mentioned that point differential, 188 points for, 179 against, so +9. That's it. For a 6-2 football team, undefeated at home, by the way, 2-2 in the road. I look at it the same way, and I go, they are winning a lot of close games. Sometimes that can go against you at some point, but then I look at the rest of the division. They've already beat the Colts twice. They have a 2-game lead, which is theoretically a 3-game lead over the Colts with those head-to-head victories. And then the Jags sitting there with 2 wins, and the Titans just with 1. I don't want to, you know, call the election and say it's over, but it does feel like the Texans have won South. It's already over, right?
I think it is. I mean, look, they've got such a lead on Indy. Jacksonville's not going to come back. I mean, Jacksonville plays Philly this week. Could they play a good game? Yeah, but Jacksonville has inherent problems. That's going to be hard for them to get the 5 wins, right? I mean, if you bet in the over of Jacksonville to get the 6, I think that's hard. The Titans have no chance. I mean, they can't protect the football, although the Titans really might have one of the best defenses in the league that no one's heard of. I know they gave up a ton of points last week to the Detroit Lions. They gave up 52, but their defensive numbers are very impressive. Now, they just can't turn the ball over. They've only had one interception all season, the Titans, but they're really good. They'll be a problem for New England to block. Trust me, there'll be a tough time for New England. New England will struggle whether Drake May plays or not. That's going to be a hard game for New England. It's just the Titans offensively just can't do anything because they're trying to run this Cincinnati Bengal offense. Why you would copy the Bengals, I have no idea. I have no idea. Because unless Joe Burrow comes with you, you can't run the offense. It puts so much responsibility on the quarterback. It puts so much responsibility on being tough in the pocket because they don't protect the quarterback very well, that I think it's really difficult. You know, and so to me, Tennessee's going down this road with Will Levis. It's comical. You know, I know Mason Rudolph will hang in there and he can do some things. He took Pittsburgh to the playoffs last year, but it's comical that they actually think Will Levis can play. It's part of the conspiracies that go on in the NFL. We played Deshaun Watson, even though he couldn't throw for 300 yards. We'll play Daniel Jones, even though he can't win a game. You know, we'll just keep playing these guys because we have more vested in them being successful than we actually do winning.
50-1 for Tennessee to somehow come all the way back and win this division. The next closest challenger to the Texans would be the Colts at 11-1. But again, remember, that's theoretically a 3-game lead, not a 2-game lead there with that head-to-head victories in the South. Michael, I want to get to what's on your mind today, and I think you got a throwback for everybody today.
Yeah, you know, we missed it yesterday. And, of course, well, all my mind is Halloween. I can't wait to see these little girls come to my door and give out candy. I mean, I'm really excited about that. The costumes are great. Yeah, give them good candy. But the costumes are great. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's a beautiful night. I can sit on my porch and I can, you know, and I don't have to listen to my dogs bark every time somebody comes to the door. And I can pass out candy. So I'm looking forward to that. But I also think I want to remember the Rumble in the Jungle with Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. I think it's one of the great stories of all time. It's a story that every NFL coach should really take notice of, because it's a strategy story. Ali looked at Foreman and said, there's no way I can beat him if I don't change what I do dramatically. There's no way I can handle him for 15 rounds. There's no way I can match power for power. And he devised a scheme to come up with a rope-a-dope. And it worked. He felt like, if I can just get this to the seventh round, I got a chance to win this, because he'll be exhausted throwing punches that don't matter. And I think, to me, it's one of the great stories of strategy more than it is of Ali's brilliance as a boxer. And so, to me, the Rumble in the Jungle, you know, and Zaire, you know, it's like, why did they go all the way over to Zaire? I have no idea. But there's a ton of books written about it. As you know, David, you're a boxing guy, too.
Oh, I'm absolutely fascinated. By the way, I'm going to have dinner with the great Lou Finocchiaro tonight, and I'm sure we'll talk about this fight. And I love the analogy to the way you just broke down for NFL coaches to switch the strategy, because you're exactly right. There's no way he's beating Big George in Zaire in 74 over there. It's just not happening. And yet, it was the rope-a-dope. Let's tire him out. Let's get him to the late rounds. And then that big right hand comes and George Foreman falls. And by the way, Foreman did tweet about that yesterday. You know this. Just what a character he has been all these years later. Love recounting those stories of the Rumble in the Jungle. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have Mike Palm's going to join us in studio. We'll get an update here on what's going on with the circuit contest, and also gets Mike's thoughts on the World Series and Week 9 in the NFL. That is next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi Line, Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi. And with Michael, the return of the Lombardi Line, that means it's the return of Mike Palm to the Lombardi Line, joining us in studio, of course, runs things here at Circa. Mike, it's always great to catch up with you here on the Lombardi Line. How are things going with the contest? Because I know it's been pure carnage from week one to week nine.
Yeah, the first 5 weeks were ludicrous, weren't they? I mean, you go from 14,200 plus entries down to 221 in the first 5 weeks. And then 2 weeks of relative stability. We lost 5-1 week, two the next week. And then last week, we, you know, lost 23 again. So, you know, 10% of the field basically went out again. Last week with a couple of upsets. So we sit with 192, 191.
Wow.
As we head in now to week nine, I think it's a tougher week than it looks, right? Because you've got these 6-point plus favorites, but nothing seems like to be a sure thing. I think there's a lot of pitfalls at every game, but I was looking at the availability charts. You know, of the big favorites, the Eagles really are the only one where about half the field has the Eagles left. The Eagles have been used. 90 of the 191 could use the Eagles against Jacksonville. Mm. Ravens, 168 still have the Ravens left. Bengals against the Raiders, 154. And almost everyone has the Vikings still.
Really?
Which I think would have been the very logical choice of Anthony Richardson, would have still been behind center. But now it mixes it up. I, in fact, Michael, laid the 6.5 on Monday because I feared the game was going to 7. And I thought, you know, Flores is just going to terrorize this kid with his defense. And then, you know, The superstars that have been created by the Indianapolis media, Ballard and Steichen, decide, you know, for the foreseeable future to go back to Flacco. And so now I'm stuck with a ticket. I'm on the wrong side of the move. Of course, it goes down to 5.5. 5 it hit in some spots. I added the over to my portfolio because now I think the game has a great potential to go over. But when you look at that, I mean, I think those are the four obvious choices. And then maybe with 191 people left, people aren't so worried about Christmas. And maybe you weren't going to use Kansas City on Christmas at Pittsburgh, but you think we see some Chiefs. People now reach into the bag with Chiefs if they're not comfortable with one of those four.
Yeah, although I think to me the Philly one would Jacksonville is just not a good team, right? And they struggle and they're not disciplined enough to keep running the football, which would be an Achilles heel into Philadelphia's defense, but they just won't do that. I would thinking to me, you know, to me, Washington on the road is not a good play. I know they're 3.5-point favorites, but that doesn't. I don't trust Cincy, Mike. I really don't. I mean, I know Joe Burrow says they're going to rack off all these wins. I think Baltimore's the safest play because I'm not sure I would take the 9 and lay the 9 with Baltimore. But I think Baltimore coming off a loss knows, and it's going to be a hard game for them, but I think they win that. You know, I really do. I would not touch that one. Although the other one I would think about is if you have Buffalo too. I just don't think Miami. Look, Miami goes up there and Miami beats up on New England and the Jets, but they never. They beat up on those teams, but they don't ever really go up there and win when they have to play in Buffalo. I think Buffalo's numbers. I mean, they're 1-6 against Buffalo against the spread. And they really seem to dominate. They faced each other. What Allen's 7-1 straight up against them. He's 5-2-1 against the spread. And Tua is actually Josh Allen's most profitable opposing quarterback against the spread in his career. So I think I lean Buffalo too.
I'm looking at that as well. You mentioned the Chiefs, Mike. That if you haven't used them yet, and yeah, you wanted to save it. That Steeler game might not be as easy as everybody thought, right, before the season when you analyze it. So you think there will be some people that hop in on them this week against Tampa Bay?
It might not be. And if Russell Wilson is playing better, and that's still, you know, the Steeler team, every year Tomlin wins 3 or 4 games they're not supposed to win, right? That they're, and we know what happened on Christmas last year. The Raiders went there, didn't throw a pass, didn't complete a pass after the first quarter.
Insane.
And won. I have to tell you, I'm a little surprised the Jets are favored tonight in this game as badly as they've played since they fired the great Robert Saleh. But maybe that Christmas play
call him Bobby.
Yeah. that Christmas play is actually Baltimore against Houston.
Really?
You know, those are tough games. Chicago, Seattle. Yeah, that's kind of a toss-up game, right? Those are three really hard games. So if you're thinking about it, maybe you just save the Ravens. I know it's a road game, but you save the Ravens at the Texans on Christmas Day.
Well, I mean, look, the Ravens went out last year on Thanksgiving Day and beat up on San Francisco. They're usually good on the road like that in games outside of, you know, the Cleveland-Cincinnati games, which always give them trouble. So look, they have to fix their defense. There's no question about that. I think the Chicago-Seattle game, you know, at that point, it'll be a fun game. I think I would lean towards taking Chicago on Christmas Day if I had to do that. I think that would be my favorite. I don't know. To me, Chicago-Arizona, that line keeps flipping. It goes to Arizona. I don't, you know, I know everybody thinks it's going to be hard to bounce back from the Hail Mary call against the Bears, but I kind of feel like the Bears will be able to attack a secondary that's so bad with throws a little bit, even though Caleb Williams doesn't throw the ball down the field very well.
Yeah, only 10 completions last week in that game against the Commanders.
That's an interesting point, and I was going to talk about this in the pressing three, but it's not the Hail Mary play. I mean, forget the Hail Mary play. Take the Hail Mary play out of that equation, Michael. How on third and goal from the one can you give the ball to a backup guard? You've brought in two tight ends. You've got all this money you invested in your receivers. And, oh, by the way, Rashawn Johnson was 3-for-3 on third and goal from the one and fourth and goal from the one. This is what you got this back for, short yardage. You have a quarterback who's not a small quarterback, right? He's got some meat on him. You've got like 8 options down there, and you want to run a trick play. Mark Schlereth called it the dumbest play in NFL history. He said that guard's hands, you have no feel for the ball. It's the dumbest play he's ever seen in NFL history. Then –
Well,
now,
you gotta,
to trump that, on the defensive side of the ball, you know this kid can't even throw it 50 yards in the air. You're going to give him a free 12 with McLaurin? You're going to play all the way back and just let him take 10 to 15 yards on that play? I mean, Dan Quinn said if we don't run that play, we have no shot of scoring. And Eberflus has now three times said the play was irrelevant. And there's an open rebellion at Hallis Hall, Michael. Everybody's coming out and talking about there's no accountability. We don't understand the play calling. Why didn't we press up on the second to last play? I mean, it's open season on Eberflus. And so I think it's going to be harder to overcome this.
Well, Eberflus was the small favorite, the favorite to be coach of the year at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, he was.
And I kept going, how is that even possible? Yeah. Like, how can you look at Eberflus and say, I don't know if it's the Hard Knocks thing and people start getting excited about them, but if they were to win big this year, it would all go to Caleb Williams.
Correct. You'd be on the offensive side of the ball. He's the defensive play caller.
It was a terrible bet.
Meanwhile, your guy Dan Quinn is the favorite right now for coach of the year.
By the way, it is still a great time of the year for Sports Equinox here at VEASAN. If you become a VEASAN Pro subscriber, Mike, you know this. You're going to get access to everything we do all the way through May 1st. That's best bets, betting splits, trends analysis, everything we do all the way through the NFL draft. It's less than $20 a month. So don't miss out on this limited time offer. Visit VEASAN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. So Mike,
your point, I think what you really saw on the sidelines of the game was when Caleb Williams was coaching the defense when they were on the field, I was like, this tells me they're not really well coached. This tells me they're not really in tune. I mean, Caleb was telling people to get back. The other players were like, you think that would have happened on a Mike Vrabel sideline? Ooh. Of course not. They would have practiced it. They would have known about it, you know. And I think to me, look, he had the other criticism for the stupid call by Waldron on the fullback inside. Really, you're just trying to get a head coaching job, trying to be smart like that, right? And so the worst call was he left the game with three timeouts. Like, why wouldn't you call a timeout on this before they lined up to kick before they went for the out of bounds play? Like 6 seconds left to go. Hey, let's just make sure. You know, even if you tackled the receivers and they called defensive holding, they would have only gotten five more yards and he still wouldn't have been able to reach the end zone.
You know, and one of the DBs said, we really needed a timeout there to gather ourselves. The one kid's taunting the crowd. How about, though, when they get to pass interference call with 31 seconds and you have first and goal at the one, the Commanders have one timeout left. As OC or the head coach or whoever, you have two jobs there: to make the Commanders burn their last time out and to get a touchdown. They didn't do that. They threw the ball into the end zone on first down and then ran it in on second down. And so you left Washington with the one. That allowed the Ertz pass to get him the first 12 yards. I mean,
That's right.
It's all comical. And by the way, talking about Vrabel, Detroit puts up 50 points with 200 yards of offense. Have you ever seen a worse special teams display than the kick coverage? I've never seen anything. In high school, they cover kicks better. Every single kick, they ran back for a touchdown. How can that be?
You know, look, but Dave pointed this out in my bottom five teams. All of them are first-year head coaches. I mean, Brian Callahan is a wonderful – I mean, I've known Brian since he's 10 years old. The great kid. He's not ready to be a head coach. I mean, that's pretty clear. He's learning on the job, right? Antonio Pierce, he dazzles you every week, right? I mean, he does something where you just shake your head and say, how did this guy become a head coach? I mean, it's just – I mean, Shane – I mean, look, Dave Canales is a head coach in the NFL. I mean, these jobs are harder to get than the United States Senator, yet they're easier to get than anything. I mean, even without any voter fraud, you can become a head coach. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I wish Mike Palm had something on his mind. Palm's Pressing 3 is next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
Bet Horse Racing's premier year-end event, the Breeders' Cup. It's tomorrow, if you can believe that, November 1st and Saturday, November 2nd, with First Bet. You sign up at firstbet.com, use the promo code VEASAN200. You're going to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200. That's firstbet.com, and use the promo code VEASAN200. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, Dave Ross here with Mike Palm in studio. And Michael, you know what this means. It is time for Palm's Pressing 3.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palm's Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, Michael, question number one. As we alluded to in the last segment, the Colts announced this week that they are benching Anthony Richardson in favor of Joe Flacco, quote, for the foreseeable future. Add Richardson to the list of first-round QBs benched. Bryce Young, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Will Levis, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, and Kenny Pickett. Of the 74 quarterbacks that were drafted number one by their teams since 2000 and were benched, only two regained the starting job with their original team, Alex Smith and Rex Grossman. Michael, does the NFL have a quarterback development problem or a win-now problem or neither?
Both. They're both. I think this is a both problem. I think there's such a sense of desperation. There was no evidence whatsoever on his college tape other than the great athleticism, Anthony Richardson, other than his speed, other than his arm, that lends you to believe he was going to manifest those skill sets into a great player. What happens to all of us, me included, is we project a player using some numbers that we can't find on tape. Well, you could say Wyoming tape with Josh Allen was inconsistent, yes, but he won a lot of games for Wyoming, and he played as well as he could. The question was, could he have played that way in the Southeast Conference? That was what was going on. Was he accurate? Not all the time. But Richardson was so inconsistent that you had to say to yourself, what would have to be true for us to be right on Richardson? And when you ask questions about quarterbacks in that vein, what would have to be true for this to be correct? Then all of a sudden you start adding lots of things to the list. And when you have too many things to the list to overcome, it becomes hard. And I think ultimately there's no plan for development. I mean, how is Bo Nix getting better every week and Anthony Richardson wasn't? I think a lot of this is, how do you set the offense up? What's the team around them? How does all that look? Everybody wants to draft a quarterback and put him in the game. Play him now. Why not? But no one talks about what system of offense we're going to run with him. What's the best way we could utilize him? And how do we get him better? How do we improve his skill? The scary part about Richardson was from the first time we saw him until we got benched last week, he wasn't getting any better. I mean, the fact that 10 times the Houston Texans got their hands on the football when he threw the ball last week told you you couldn't play him. You couldn't play him. He's two or three. And then it just shows you how stupid that some of these coaches are. I mean, he throws the ball at the end of the half. I couldn't believe you didn't text me, Mike. At the end of the half, it cost him the game. Meanwhile, he's watched Richardson play the entire game up until that point. And for what reason did he think he was going to magically become an accurate thrower? It's insane.
It's almost impossible to be 2 of 13 in today's NFL passing the football with the way the rules are written.
Yeah.
That you can't touch the receivers and all. I mean, you used to say quarterback 63%. That's a very accurate quarterback. That's a below average quarterback now. But here's a problem for Steichen. I think, Michael, with his credibility, when they made him the starter, he said the only way he's going to get better is by playing. And now the reporter asked him the question. He said, yeah, I said it, but now he's got to watch. I mean, where's his credibility when you make statements like that? You can't really walk them back.
I mean, when does he learn not to screw the game up at the end of the half? I mean, he's one of the worst coaches at the end of the half. They should outsource to him. They should have him leave, call a call center in India, and let them manage the game at the end of the half because he's that bad. I mean, he cost them the Browns game last year. Do you remember that debacle?
Yeah.
He did it twice in the half in the Browns game. I mean, this guy's a disaster at the end of the half. He keeps calling. I mean, he makes Kellen Moore look like he's a crafty game manager.
All right, question two, Michael. On numerous occasions, you have communicated your disdain for Jerry Jones, Woody Johnson, Robert Kraft, and Jimmy Haslam. These four owners are all hands-on, participating in, if not directing, the football decisions of their organizations. As a former GM, Michael, would you rather have an owner that is A, 100% invested and passionate about the success of the on-field product, even though in most instances it's to their own detriment, like the four gentlemen I mentioned, B, an owner that just signs the checks and stays out of it, like Sheila Ford Hamp, or C, an owner indifferent to the team's on-field success, instead motivated by profit, like Stan Kroenke?
I would rather have an owner that asks really good questions, that lets you run the company, that calls you in and says, why do you want to do this? Tell me why. Just basically tell me why. and then support you 100%. But it's not going to happen because these owners, because why? They want to get credit. They want to win their way. I mean, Woody's been a 34% win percentage owner since 2010. Do you think he's going to change how he behaves? I mean, Jerry hasn't been to a conference championship game since 1994. You think he's going to change? I mean, Kraft got spoiled and tried to take all the credit for the 6 Super Bowls. All the credit. Instead of sitting back saying, look at me, I hired this guy. Nobody else told me to hire this guy. I hired him. I won 6 Super Bowls. But no, he wants to take credit like he was calling the plays. It's just ego. It's all ego-driven. If you're Cleveland and you promote yourself as being this analytically organization that Jimmy Haslam does, how do you keep playing Deshaun Watson? Watson started, what, 17, 18, 19 games in his career in Cleveland, hasn't thrown for 300 yards. Jameis Winston started one, boom, 300-yard passing game. I mean, what's wrong with this pitcher? It's really not – you don't need to be Columbo to deduce what's happening here. It's all ego-driven. They don't want to win. That's the biggest misconception of the National Football League. These owners want to win their way. It's the same thing with Daniel Snyder. He didn't really want to win. He only wanted to win his way. If he wanted to win, he would have let Mike Shanahan just run his company. But he wanted to win his way. So he had he and the punter kind of orchestrate everything behind the scenes. And that's what the NFL is today, because that's where everybody's chasing the Hall of Fame, Mike. They all want to get in the Hall of Fame.
Which current owner best fits your description of that ask the right questions ideal owner?
Bisciotti in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Look, they could take all the credit they want. Jed York in San Francisco. They could take all the credit they want for Lamar Jackson, okay? But Bisciotti pushed that. Bisciotti pushed that. The guy sitting in the green room, 31 picks went ahead of him. Bisciotti pushed that. And nobody will tell you differently. How about Dr. York out in San Francisco when he tells Kyle Shanahan, look, if you have a fourth round grade on this guy, I don't care what we just did in the draft. You need to take this guy the last pick. And he did. That's what owners do. They support you, but they challenge you. They force you to answer the question, why would we do this? Like, if David Tepper were really a good owner, he would have said to the great Dan Morgan, hey, Dan, you really want to give away Deontay Johnson for this? Because the picks are going to be within 10 picks of each other. Is this a smart move for us? How does this make us look? Is this guy that bad that we can't get a compensatory pick for him? That's the question. But, of course, Morgan doesn't have to answer that because Morgan couldn't answer that question.
My question three, Michael, in watching the Ravens and Browns on Sunday, I thought two things were fairly obvious. The Browns as a team on both sides of the ball were playing a lot harder for Jameis Winston than they were for Deshaun Watson. And number two, these teams that play Lamar twice a year definitely have a game plan for him. Why is it that when he takes on an NFC team, it's like they've never coached a football game before, and he puts up 500 yards and beats them by 30 points? Can't NFC defensive coordinators take the tapes from the Browns, and not necessarily Lou Anarumo's Bengals, but the Browns and the Steelers, and develop a game plan to be competitive against Lamar Jackson?
Well, I think the biggest issue is, Mike, is most defensive coordinators don't ever coordinate their rush. And the only way you're going to be able to beat Lamar Jackson is to coordinate your rush. You know, most people, they don't talk about it. They talk about coverage all the time on television. But what affects a quarterback more is the game plan within the rush. Is, okay, we've got J.J. Watt, T.J. Watt on one side. We got Highsmith on the other. How do we rush Lamar? Okay, one guy goes high, one guy goes low. The two inside guys have to push the pocket. They can't swim up the field. They have to push the pocket. So to me, that's really what it comes down to. It comes down to the lack of these defensive coordinators in the league coordinating the rush and understanding how to rush certain quarterbacks and how to game plan that rush. It's hard to do. It's demanding, and you've got to be disciplined with it, which violates most of the teams because they want to go to Dairy Queen after practice.
Let me just say, with the reinstitution of the Lombardi line, that is by far my favorite segment. Right there. It's the music, it's the intensity of the questions, Michael, and it's your answers to Mike Palm's questions. Mike's great having you in studio.
Mike's the new Oprah.
You're so
going to think about that now.
Put him right on the couch.
Thank you.
Compliment, Mike. That's a compliment. You ask great questions.
They're fantastic.
Phil Donahue.
When we come back, as Aaron Rodgers found the fountain of youth, that's next year in the Lombardi line.
You
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
We continue the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi. A lot of fun having Mike Palm in the last segment, Michael. I did want to get to, obviously, with the beginning of week number 9, to pick your brain as to whether this is news or noise.
News.
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise.
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. Noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Okay, Michael, this might be my favorite story of the... To talk about burying the lead. I think this story is fantastic, and I got to know from you if this is news or noise, because this has been going on since the beginning of time. People have been trying to find the remedy and the fountain of youth. Aaron Rodgers, who is 40, he's been dealing with some ankle issues, got some knee issues, some hammies, the whole bit. Now, he said, though, on Tuesday that he's kind of found that fountain of youth. He's got a cayenne pepper in water, some sort of creation that was suggested by the veteran punter, Thomas Morstead. And he says he's feeling better, and maybe it's all due to this cayenne pepper and water concoction. News or noise?
You know, I think, look, everybody has a remedy for stopping aging. They say if you fast 18 hours, 16 hours a day, it slows the aging process down. I've listened to a lot of medical experts talk about how you can rejuvenate your cells by slowing down by how much you consume, what you eat, and all those things. So, look, I think everybody has a remedy. We see it all the time. I mean, it's all those lose weight. And, take this pill, you'll lose 35 pounds in about 2 seconds. So, who knows? But if it works for him, I'm happy for him. I really am. I'm happy that it does work for him. I don't know if I'm not a big cayenne pepper guy, Dave. Maybe you are. You want to try it? Go ahead. I'm just not interested in trying that.
I'm not going to be trying it. It sounds disgusting to me. Look, I know people get on Aaron because he's out there and he's different. But I don't mind somebody that puts themselves out there, right, Michael? I mean, at least he tells us of his quirks. This is a quirk, right? So some people are going to go, oh, my goodness, what's he going to do? You know, he does the darkness retreats. He does all these different things in the off season. Is it the placebo effect, though, Michael, that if he believes it's actually helping him, then it's helping him?
Then it helps.
Right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I do think that's right, David. I think if it's helping you, if you feel like it helps you, then why not? You know, it's like when your whoop band says you've had a great night's sleep, then you got to go with it, right? even though you feel tired, right?
Yeah, I'm with you. So look, if the cayenne pepper trick works for Aaron, he can go tonight.
Whatever works, man. Whatever works, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to knock him for that. We've talked a lot about the Colts over the course of this week, and obviously that's been the big news this week, that they're going to go to Joe Flacco Sunday night in Minnesota. That game's 5.5 now. Total's gone up now that we've seen that Flacco's going to get the start. But Shane Steichen said that he's not giving up on his second-year quarterback and added this, Michael.
Joe will be our quarterback going forward. Tough decision, but one I felt was in the best interest of our football team. I feel that Joe gives us the best chance to win right now. With that being said, not giving up on Anthony by any means. Really not. He's a young player with a ton of talent. And he'll use this time to continue to develop and grow as a professional. It's my obligation to 53 guys in this organization, to win football games. And right now I'm focused on the present of winning football games. And, we'll get to the future when we have to get to the future.
Which should have been the plan all along. When you take a guy with very limited experience in college, with very inconsistent play in college, this should have been the plan all along. Like, you shouldn't put him out there unless you really felt like he could win the game and operate the game. And it was fairly clear from his first start this year until last week that this guy has no consistency in his play. But that could come. And I know you say, well, it's going to take time. You got to play him. No, let him run the scout team. Let him run scout team and see if we can complete some passes in scout team. Let him run. Let him take 15 plays after Wednesday and Thursday practice against all the other young players and see if he can complete some passes in that group. I mean, put more 7-on-7s in the day in. See if we can complete some passes. I mean, you can get players better. It's called practice. You don't necessarily have to get them better in the game. And to me, I can't imagine his practice tape looked very good based on the way he can only throw 10 completions a game and average 44% completion. So, like, I think this should have been the plan all along. This rush to put him in the game only set him up for failure, Dave.
Michael, when I hear you talk about the ego of owners, right, that they want to win their way, and Shane Steichen had been on record saying he's got to play in order to get better, and now he's basically saying, no, he's got to get better by practicing and watching, right? Does that ego get in the way that, man, I kind of made this hardline stance that I got to do it this way, and now I realize maybe that was a mistake?
Well, look, Jordan Love took 4 years to really, when he threw a couple passes in a Kansas City game when he came in, he looked ridiculously bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
They sat on that pick for a long time. And I think to me, if you're Shane Steichen, you know, you had to say to yourself, look, this guy's not ready to play. Like, you know, to me, you've got to earn the right to play. Your draft status doesn't give you the right to play. Your draft status gives you money. It doesn't give you the right to play. And I think to me, if you come out and just be honest, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play this young guy. We're going to run our system. We're going to build an offense that we feel like give us a chance to win. And when Richardson's ready to take part in that offense, we'll go forward. But I think to me that this is what happens is now you lose confidence. The fans lose confidence. It becomes a harder game.
Absolutely. And again, second-year head coach, second-year quarterback, maybe they both have to learn a little bit about what the proper way is to going forward. But Joe Flacco will go forward as a starting quarterback. Michael, I want to get to our best bets here, and obviously we're going to begin week number 9 in the NFL, and our best bets are brought to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. This number here has been 2, seen 1.5. So what's interesting to me in the course of our show today was 42 in the total the whole way. Now it's gone up to 42.5. And I was kind of looking at that under most of the week. And Michael, I've not made an official play on it. But when I see that total go up, you mentioned it's good weather. It's warm weather tonight in the Meadowlands. There is going to be a new kicker. We're not sure which is going to be the kicker yet for the Jets. And with all the injuries on defense, am I looking at this the wrong way? Should I be thinking that maybe we get more points than what I expect?
Well, I do. I think to me, this is, look, it comes down to the Jets offensive line tonight, right? And I think if they can protect, then you're going to be able to attack a defense that's playing a lot of backups in it right now. But protection has always been an issue for the Jets, right? And they've got to create, they got to stop, let me say this, negative plays. Houston Texans are the number one team defensively in creating negative plays in the National Football League. And they do that with their ability to use their speed and their movement up front to create, to find a negative play. And I think to me, that's going to be the key. And how quickly do the Jets adapt to this? Because their speed on defense is impressive, but they're missing 2 starting linebackers. You know, that's going to be an issue. They're missing a starting safeties. That could be an issue. So they're missing too many players in this game. And when you break them down, you know, Jimmy Ward's not playing, the two, and then one of their defensive tackles will not play. So I think it does lend itself to the over. But here's what I would say. This Jet team is not an over team.
Right.
I mean, they just don't score a lot of points. And you can't buck history on that. I know the Jets, this is their season, and I know everybody's on the Jets. We thought that same thing when they played Buffalo at home. They couldn't close that one out. I think to me, the only thing that gives you sense is the Texans will have a hard time protecting. And who's going to make the plays for the Texans in offense? Is Robert Woods going to come in? Is John Michi, who hasn't been very good so far? Xavier Hutchinson? I mean, those are the guys that are going to throw the ball to him.
Very quickly, because I think we've seen some teams, Michael, that can figure out ways to win different ways. The Jets don't feel like one of those teams. They feel like it's got to be defense.
No, they're not.
Right? They got to get turnover. Are the Texans now? I know they got injuries now at receiver, but do they look like a team that can win both ways? You want to get into a shootout? Maybe it helped to have Dell and Stephon Diggs.
I mean,
can they win both ways?
Look, they've turned the ball over 9 times in the last 4 games, right? They've only given the ball away twice. So they create plays with their defense, and they almost beat Green Bay. I mean, it took a last-second kick by Green Bay, and they had 55 passing yards. So, yes, they can win different ways. Look, the Jets have to stop Joe Mixon, and we haven't even talked about that. The Jets' run defense, since Jeff Albrecht has taken over, has given over 400 yards rushing on the ground.
Oof.
You could say it's no big deal, But for a game like tonight, if Joe Mixon gets going and they control the football and puts pressure on Aaron Rodgers to have to and that offensive line to have to protect, that becomes a real issue.
It's really hard for me to back the Jets tonight in any scenario here, but against a team, as you just laid out, you know they're going to run the ball with Mixon, especially with those injuries at wideout, and they haven't been able to stop the run here on the Jets side of the ball. So very good analysis as always. Of course, the G-Bank Visa Signature Card is your best bet out there, delivering 1% cashback rewards on eligible gaming transactions and 2% cashback rewards on all other eligible purchases. For more information, go to VSiN.com/G-Bank. That's VSIN.com/G-Bank. Subject to credit approval, terms and conditions do apply. Michael, week 9. It begins tonight, my friend. Wow. I can't wait to see what happens, and we'll talk about it tomorrow here on Lombardi Line. Absolutely. Great
Thank
stuff.
You, David.
Thank you, Michael. We'll see you tomorrow right here, everybody, on the Lombardi Line.